Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, Black America. My name is Kenneth Jones, and welcome to Tuesday Evening's Black Urban America, 8 p.m. to 9 p.m. On Saturday, we have Provocative Thought with Carl Steve, and his shows are 8 p.m. to 9 p.m. In fact, he's been getting a lot of callers to his shows, and I thank you for supporting the brother out of Philadelphia. Also, again, I'd just like to remind the people that we have a new program called the Marketing Partnership Program, which We Talk Productions will assist people that are self-employed and also people that have small businesses. We will help them to be a marketing partnership, and I guarantee you that your products and your services will gain national as well as international exposure. Tonight, I have Ms. Chastity Chandler. Good evening, Ms. Chandler. How are you?
Other than this head cold, I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
Fine. I understand that you're in Florida.
I am.
That state had a rough couple weeks, huh? And still the cleanup and the whole bringing the different cities back. How is it going down there?
Well, there are still people without power in my county and the nearby counties. And Key West has pretty much been torn apart. So they're picking up the pieces. I know other parts of the state were greatly affected as well with flooding, trees down, power outages, that kind of thing. A lot of people are facing homelessness because of their apartment complexes being flooded out.
Mm-hmm. So I guess
it's pretty hectic.
Mm-hmm. But I guess it's going to be a lot of intervention services for these different families that lost their homes, their livelihoods, basically their whole community, basically.
Yeah, I know me and another therapist in my area, we came together yesterday and did a free post-IRMA processing group. So we're trying to make sure that people have the services that they need. But right now there's a lot of people in financial needs, home needs, you know, the basic necessities, because a lot of people lost everything. So, yeah, it's pretty bad.
So it probably could take Well, basically, it usually take about a good 2 to 3 years before they bring a town back. We talk about bringing back towns.
Key West got hit pretty bad. I think out of everywhere in Florida, Key West got hit the worst.
Right.
The most devastation. So, yeah. Which kind of, I mean, I was planning to go there very soon because I had never been. Born and raised in Florida, but never been to Key West. But, yeah, it's you can see the pictures on the news. It's pretty bad. Yeah.
Yeah, and my heart goes out to the people in Florida, because I was in Hurricane Sandy about 3-4 years ago, 2013. And I was in Hurricane Sandy, and it took out a whole coast on the New Jersey state line.
Yeah.
The New Jersey seashore, but it's revamped now. If you drive through it, you think nothing
happened.
Ever happened.
Yeah, I think we have more resources and more things at our fingertips to kind of like rebuild. I think my heart breaks for everybody that's lost things in Irma and Harvey, but the islands are my main concern because they're being hit again right now. So that's
Puerto Rico.
Yeah, Puerto Rico, Dominican Republic got hit last night. They're all getting hit again with another category 5. That's 2 in like 1 week. And so,
yes.
And they got hit pretty bad to begin with. So, I mean, they don't even have shelter to even.
Yeah,
a lot
I know.
Of
but they evacuated the island, I heard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's pretty bad.
So, let's tell the audience about yourself. What is Ms. Chandler all about?
Well, if you can't tell by now, I'm a helper, I'm a professional helper. So I am a licensed mental health counselor, a master's level certified addictions professional, internationally trained certified alcohol and drug counselor. I'm a certified sex therapist, and I am a newly certified Daring Way facilitator. So I do lots of different things to help people with general mental health, substance abuse, trauma, and, of course, sex and sexuality issues.
Okay. Let me ask you something about the drug and alcohol in your different specialties or, as you say, in the health field, specialization. We specify.
I'm sorry, what'd you say?
I was going to ask you a question about one of your specialties. And I said, oh, the
sure.
mental health community calls specialization.
Yes, I have several specializations, so sometimes it's difficult to make sure I hit everything.
let me ask you something. I'm getting off my questions and whatnot, but I want to ask you something. What do you think the mental health status of our president today? I'm just asking a question.
I'm sure. I feel you. Well, technically speaking, we're not supposed to diagnose individuals that we aren't seeing personally in therapy because we don't have a holistic picture of what's going on. But,
oh, come on, Ms.
Chandler.
I've been hearing the guy for 30 years. I think he's a narcissistic. He has some really severe mental health complications there.
Yes, a lot. He
knowing
is,
the guy since 1982. Huh?
There was a lot. Already printed. A lot of people already gave their professional opinions. And the majority of the mental health field, I think they actually removed the rule that we can't diagnose public figures because of our 45th president. But the general consensus is that he has narcissistic personality disorder. I'm not really sure if that's it or if there's more to it, but that's the general consensus typically in the mental health field right now. That's their overall opinion. For sure, that is there. So,
do you agree with that diagnosis? Do you feel they're on the right path, or you think they're overly sensitive to his platform?
I mean, when you look at the DSM-5 and you look at the symptomology and characteristics of narcissistic personality disorder, I mean, I think he fits the bill. I'm not personally diagnosing him, but, yeah, I mean, he meets the criteria for sure.
Yes.
But any of us at any given moment can meet various diagnosis criteria. That's why a lot of it has, you know, time frames and severity specifiers to make sure, you know, people aren't labeled improperly. So.
Oh, well, since we on the mental health platform here. What do you think is the overall mental health status of the African American community, whether it's urban or suburban? What do you think is our overall mental health status?
Well, what I will say is that we got to do more. I know we're working very hard to break the stigma of mental health overall, but especially in the Black community. We have this whole mentality that, you know, what happens in our house stays in our house. We only talk to the pastor, or you just kind of got to suck it up. So I think that those particular mindsets have led to a lot of mental health issues and probably made a lot of things worse because we don't, as a people, typically reach out to get help. And I know several platforms, some of which I'm a part of, that is working really hard to break that, working really hard to get directories and listings for Black therapists out there so that the people in our community can reach out to people maybe that they feel more relatable to, more comfortable with, and to be able to talk to someone that looks like them.
Do you think there is availability of African-American mental health counselors / therapists available
Absolutely.
To us?
Absolutely. I'm actually the vice president of Black Therapists Rock, and we have an online community of over 15,000 Black therapists, social workers, life coaches, psychiatrists, psychologists, school-based counselors, applied behavioral therapists, art therapists, all types of helping professionals, and that's an international organization. So, yes, we do have availability in our own backyard for someone that looks like us to be able to help us professionals.
Now, mental health community centers have been growing in the urban areas and you would think that by now, it's been growing since like the early 80s, I should say really strong since the crack epidemic. It's just a lot of our households got exposed. Why do you think that we still are resistant or have some type of stigma attached to the social work and mental health?
Well, I think a lot of times we characterize social workers as the people that take our children away. So we don't really have a really realistic connection as to what social workers do. And then as far as therapists are concerned, you got to think back, even the forefathers of psychology, the people who have built the background of our field, none of them look like us.
Right.
So a lot of times when we think of that, and then we think you got to be crazy. You know, we got to think you got to be crazy to go see somebody to get help. You know, so we don't typically reach out for help for any reason. It's just like saying, Black people don't commit suicide. Well, that's not true. Black people do commit suicide. We've had several Black actors commit suicide this year. Black people commit suicide. Black people have mental health concerns. I mean, anything can trigger a mental health concern. You could be stressed out at work or overwhelmed at your house or a natural disaster. There are lots of people who were affected by Harvey and Irma, and some were affected vicariously just by watching that unfold on the news and seeing people hurt like that will affect people. So absolutely, I think that that's part of the reason why we don't typically reach out.
Well, let me ask you another one. Since you said that most of the mental health models, not most, let's say, most of the mental health models that are utilized in these community mental health centers, they were formulated by people that don't look like us. So the models they theorize, right? Do you feel it utilized by the Black family in America?
Just because the theories were invented by people or come up with with people who don't look like us doesn't mean it doesn't relate to us, because the theories are the theories, no matter who's sitting in front of you. But there are actual theories and models that are based from a more African perspective. So there is African-American psychology. Like there's a whole realm of particular modalities that is more specific for the Black community itself. It just depends on the practitioner and what they're trained in, what they feel comfortable in, and what's going to work best for the client, if that makes sense.
Okay, I'm going to switch the conversation. You are certified You are a certified alcohol substance abuse specialist counselor?
Yes, I am.
I was watching 60 Minutes a couple weeks ago, and they were talking about the heroin problem in the suburb, affluent suburb and rural communities. And they would use different code words, but the images they shown was affluent white folks. Now, I grew up knowing heroin. There always been it. I come from, there always been a heroin epidemic. Back when you, 40 years ago, when you had an image of a person that used heroin, it was usually somebody that looked like us. But white folks always use heroin. This is not awakening or what have you. Why do you think so much attention is put on the heroin epidemic, who's been around, so I said, since the mid to late 60s, and because other cultures are being involved in this drug, or it's just coming to the forefront? What do you think, Dallas?
I think it's a mixture of both, but I also think it has something to do with the presence of an overwhelming number of overdoses. Once people start dying and those types of statistics start affecting major metropolitan areas, then you're going to automatically hear more about it, if that makes sense. It's kind of like people saying we kill each other more than, you know, Caucasians kill us or this and that. And it's depending on what you're looking at. If you're looking to find something specifically to support your case, then guess what? That's what you'll find. Research, you can find research to support any argument that you have. You see what I mean?
True.
So, you know, sometimes it takes things happening to our counterparts for people to start getting upset. It's like the young lady who lost her life in at the riot in, what is it, Charlottesville,
Virginia.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
She lost her life. And I'm not saying that a black life means more than a white life. We know what we've been talking about, and we're not saying that white lives don't matter. We're simply saying that black lives at this point in time in our country are less valued than the life of a dog. You know what I mean? You kill a dog, you're going to jail. But you kill a black man or a black woman, you might just get off. So when we see that happen to our counterpart, there's a different take on it. Just like the young lady who was killed by the police when she called 911 and went out in the alley and she was killed. Those situations were handled much differently than the situations that we've been seeing in Minnesota. So I'm just saying sometimes it takes things to happen to our counterpart or for our counterpart to experience those things before they're brought to the forefront and made a big deal, if that makes sense.
Yes. I understand. I understand what you're saying. I agree wholeheartedly. It's a shame that if that was a black girl that got killed in Charlottesville, it would just be another person that died. Probably would say what she should. Matter of fact, we probably would have one-day coverage, any coverage at all. So, yes, it depends. Just like last night, he got shot dead. If that would have been a young black kid, he'll say, well, he just had a knife in his hand. And the rage, uproar, I don't mean to be sensitive. That happens to us all the time. You know,
yeah,
and
that's true.
I think
there's more white kids that lose their lives as well. I think that the media just portrays what it wants to portray. You know, their agenda is their agenda. They're there to stir up things, you know, and you got all these conspiracy theorists. I think we definitely are unproportionately targeted or victims, but I think that a lot of times that's not looked at. But there have been a lot of some of our Caucasian counterparts who lost their lives as well, and nothing was said about it because it wasn't a major news type of thing. So we got to understand that what we get on the news isn't the full picture of a situation. They just feed us what they want us to know to stir up, you know, mania and panic, if that makes sense.
So tell me, Ms. Chandler, is sex therapy a new phenomenon?
No. Masters and Johnson created sex therapy decades ago. It's been around for a while now.
So what is sex therapy?
What is sex therapy? That is a great question. I think the best way to describe it is sex therapy is an additional specialized form of therapy that helps individuals with sexual dysfunctions, desires, sexuality issues, intimacy and communication issues within individuals as well as couples. So, I mean, there's a whole section in DSM-5 specific to sexually related issues. So this
okay.
A sex therapist
to the
is someone who has...
what DSM-5 is. I know it's
okay,
a diagnostic manual, but...
The diagnostic,
no,
yeah, I got you. It's the layman term.
Diagnostic statistical manual, right?
Yes, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, and we're on the 5th edition right now. And basically,
mm-hmm.
It's the Bible of Mental Health. It basically outlines what criteria and symptoms an individual must have in order to meet a diagnosis, if that makes sense. So it's
mm-hmm.
not like we can look at somebody and say, oh, they bipolar. You know how we do. Everybody bipolar nowadays. Because you just look at them like, oh, they bipolar. You was just happy. Now
I
you
tell
a
person,
many
they bipolar.
But
know,
that ain't even what bipolar would like.
But you know, well, just like in the early 80s, mid-80s, ADHD was like a very common diagnosis. It was a new diagnosis. It was kind of diagnosed, ADHD expanded to special education classes. They got this Ritalin, this other medication to address ADHD. And come to find out, ADHD, you know, it's sometimes, you know, some of these diagnoses are fast, too.
Yeah, that's why it's really important. That's still one of the most overly used diagnosis in our society. I think just because a person has the symptoms doesn't necessarily mean they need the label. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So it's really important to make sure you're going to the right professional, because what you have is a lot of medical doctors are providing that diagnosis to our children. And don't get me wrong, I love our medical doctors. But believe it or not, me as a licensed therapist is more qualified to make that diagnosis than your MD, because I'm the one who got the training and the schooling and the experience to know what is what, versus a medical doctor might have took one course that involved anything dealing with mental health. They don't that's not a part of what they have to do as far as specializations, unless they go into a specialization for mental health. Does that make sense? It's kind of like... It's kind of like going to the heart doctor when you got a brain problem. You know what I mean? So it's really important. I get calls all the time. Well, I'm looking for a psychologist. Okay, what are you looking for a psychologist for? I'm looking for a psychologist for therapy. Okay, don't get me wrong. There are psychologists that still provide therapy. But most psychologists and psychiatrists, typically they don't do traditional talk therapy anymore. Most of them, psychologists do more testing, more assessing, more assessments and testing.
Evaluations.
You have a few who still do therapy. Evaluations, exactly. And psychiatrists prescribe medications. So typically
right.
when a person sees a psychiatrist, unless there's a few still out there that actually do therapy, don't get me wrong, I'm not knocking everybody. But typically you're going to spend an hour with the psychiatrist, your first appointment. After that, you're going to be doing 15, 20 minutes appointments.
If that's
it's
long,
for med management.
It's just always good to renew your script.
Exactly. So I think a lot of times we're looking for the right thing, but in the wrong places. And most mental health diagnoses, you know, if we're talking anxiety, depression, things of that nature, the research shows that medication along with psychotherapy treatment. So otherwise, you're just going to be a medicated, depressed person. You know, the medication is not going to get rid of your depression. We got to figure out why you're depressed and figure out how to help you learn how to cope with that depression. You see what I'm saying? Otherwise, you're going to be a depressed, medicated person. You know, I'm only pro-medication when absolutely necessary. I have interacted with children who were very overactive. I mean, very inattentive, meet the criteria for ADHD like a T. But if you could teach them skills and they can manage it, they might not need to be put on any of this medication.
Ms. Chapman, we have on the line Ms. Jay Henson. How are you, Jay?
Hi. How are you?
She also is from Florida. Boy, I got two people in one night for Florida. Wow. Both of you are basically in the same field, but Jay, she runs a whole center of dance, and like you would refer your kids to for activities. You know, so,
okay.
You have a question for Ms. Chandler? Oh, I have another question. Ms. Chandler, this is kind of been striking me, you know, like a lot of black folks. Now, I heard the other cultures going to sex therapists. Do you have a lot of black clients as in your sex therapy?
Well, where I live at, the area I live at, there are black people. My black clientele is growing. But the black community is not my predominant population right now. And I think that's let me tell you why I think that is. First of all, I'm in private practice. I'm in private practice, and I'm predominantly almost completely self-pay. So you got to pay out of pocket to see me. I take very little insurance.
I know what self-pay means.
Yeah, I take very little insurance.
You don't accept any third-party payments.
So I am paneled with one insurance company, and then I do work with my clients on, you know, rates and stuff of that nature because I'm not in it for the money. I'm definitely in it to help individuals. But my population of African-Americans is growing. But, again, I still think it's about breaking that stigma. So I do community events to get involved. I know I was invited to a black church a couple of weeks ago. No, it was before the conference. So about a month or a month and a half ago, the church invited me to come talk to them about sex. And I was like, okay.
So
I went and talked to the church. The church invited me. I came out.
It had to be Baptist.
No, actually, it was Seventh-day Adventist church.
What? Seventh-day Adventist?
Yes, I knew one of their members, and they invited me, and they had me come speak to their congregation, and it was a very good conversation, actually.
Do you have any questions, Jay?
Oh, there's just so much to say. I just don't know where to begin. But
well, first of all, how you doing, Jay, down there? Well, I mean, you guys are really saying something else. But I think her community and your community get hit hard, huh? It's got a lot of rain and wind?
Yeah, mostly rain and wind. I mean, you have, you know, slight damage to trees and roofs and, you know, but it wasn't, we avoided a catastrophe that, you know, a lot of people were expecting. So that's good. We were blessed. Where are you? I'm in the Tampa Bay area.
Oh, cool. I used to live in Lakeland. I'm in Port St. Lucie now. I'm familiar with that area.
Okay, yeah, I know where both areas are. Yeah, well, I think, and I think Lakeland fared pretty well, too, this time.
Oh, no, Lakeland got hit
I have
bad. The eye went right over Polk County. They got hit real bad.
Oh, okay. Oh, wow. Yeah. I have a cousin that was in the Keys, so I'm still trying to get in touch with him. So, you know, there were areas that were devastated. But in regards to the conversation, so I was in and out, but, you know, I just have a lot of concerns about the issues of mental health in the community and in the black community, you know, coming up. I mean, things are changing, So we have so many things to deal with in addition to health issues, economic issues, social issues, psychotropic drugs and, you know, self-induced issues. And, you know, so there's so many things that are going on. And I think that dialogue is very important because many people have been in a position where, just like you had indicated earlier, that it was hush-hush, you know, you just be quiet, you know, and don't talk about it. And there definitely needs to be dialogue. But, you know, that has to be tempered also with not maintenance of drugs. Well, even in some cases, maintenance. I mean, I've known many young and middle-aged African-Americans in the community that have been diagnosed, and they're put on psychotropic drugs, and they're not managed, they're not monitored, and it's kind of like it's a pill mill. You know, come in, they say, oh, I'm hallucinating, I'm seeing things, I'm going through. You say, okay, well, let's try some other drugs. And so, you know, it's become a highly profitable entity, and there's just so many instances where perhaps services like yours, where people have the opportunity to have conversation and, you know, someone that they can reach out to on a regular basis, because, I mean, that's not my field, but I've wound up having to do that because, you know, so many people are just, they want an ear, they want to be, they would need somebody to talk to, somebody that they can trust, someone they feel comfortable with, all those things that you were talking about earlier. And, you know, there's so much going on everywhere so fast. Many people are being lost
in the shuffle,
dropping through the hole.
Absolutely.
Yeah, there's so many of them. And the saddest part is when you see this happen in the children. And there was a gentleman that came and spoke a little while ago. I'm not going to mention his name right now, but he was a doctor of psychology. And he, one of the things he talked about was the labeling of the children and how so much of that is being, it's profit-driven, because the schools get money every time they're labeled ESL and LCD and DWG. When they receive these labels, there's no testing to actually quantify, indicate that these youngsters have ailments. But it can be just simply based on the fact that a teacher doesn't feel that they're competent or they're able to keep up or they're social, they can recommend them for these titles. And then once they're classified, the next recommendation is the drugs that they're receiving, which chemically, when you take the molecular composition of some of these drugs and you break it down, it has the same formulation as crack cocaine. So they're giving these drugs to the kids, and they're and once they start, and the parents get their check, the school gets their check, and the pharmaceuticals, they get their money. Once everybody starts to get paid, they're in that shuffle. It's like one of those round rivers when you go to the amusement parks, and the river's just going around and around. And once you get it, it just pulls you in. That's it. You're in there, and you're in this system for the rest of your life. Well, until you're 18, when they kick you off, and now you have a whole host of other mental issues that are going on that are actually forcing a lot of the kids to wind up in the criminal system. And it's just a vicious cycle that's going on, and, you know, there's no stopping it. And I got to tell you, there was a kid that was in one of my summer camps, and it was so sad to see her not understand why she had to get a higher dosage of drugs. And she was just sitting there, and because she couldn't concentrate, she was fidgety, she was, you know, moving all around. She was here, there, everywhere. And her mom says, yeah, well, you know, she's not listening because she needs a higher dose. And so she went to the doctor. She got a higher dose, and the girl came like 2 days later, and she sat in the room, and when we, you know, called her name, she just looked, and she had these, you know, tears in her eyes because she was, and she was only like five.
A lot of that stuff. Oh man, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
And she, Yeah, and so she's five, and she's sitting there, and she has these tears in her eyes, and we say, hey, how you doing? She says, okay, and she'll just look down. I'm like, whoa, that's the rest of her life, you know, and, you know, there's so much, there's a lot of corruption going on in here. There's a lot of things, and people are being used as patsies, employees, and, you know, there's a whole institutionalized system that's profiting off of these children.
Yeah.
And,
but what
and,
I would say, too,
mm-hmm.
what I was going to say, because I used to be a certified ESE teacher here in Florida, what I will say mm-hmm. is what I've seen on the on that side of it, as well as the therapy side of it, because I worked for a community mental health in DJJ for years, is
mm-hmm.
that a lot of times, especially in our community, our parents push our kids to be labeled so that they can get a check. I've seen it happen more times than not. I've seen
mm-hmm,
our people come in pushing for medication because they know if the kids get prescribed medication, it's a greater chance they're going to get a check.
Oh, hold on, hold on, ladies. Hold
what
I got a question. Hold on. I have a question, Jay and Jesse. I have a question. You're trying to say there are parents that want their kids to get diagnosed with certain condition get extra dollars on the deck.
Yeah, some
absolutely.
Of the parents
I've seen
do that, and then some of the parents are in a situation where they're constantly hearing from the teachers and the principals at the school saying, you know, this child is unmanageable, this child can't stay on task, this child is this, and they're constantly complaining about the child and saying, you know, we have to do something. We're going to put them in special classes. We're going to give them a special educational plan. We're going to do all these things. And, you know, the parents at some point, they say, hey, well, they said, let's recommend this. You know, we want to try this for your child. And the parent not having the tools or the educational,
mm-hmm.
you know, level to be able to combat, ask questions, because there have been instances where parents have come to me and say, Ms. Jay, you know, they want to put my child in this class. Can you come with me to the meeting? I said, sure, I'll go with you. And then we have conversation and dialogue. I said, well, why are we going straight to this? Why don't we try this first and try that first? And some parents are exhausted, you know, fighting
That's
this
true.
Behemoth. And they say, you know what, if these pills are going to calm down, and then the kid comes home, they're lethargic, they're just sitting around, and when they go to school,
yeah.
there's no more complaints. And they say, well, you know, so you have an array of different reasons why. But just
yeah,
as you indicated, many of them are saying, hey, some of them are saying, hey, act crazy so we can get a check. We need more money. I have heard
yeah,
parents say that.
Yeah, parent involvement, I think, is really key. I know for me, you know, I'm divorced, so I'm a single mom of three kids. I try to make sure that my kids' teachers know who I am. They know my background, so they know they can't pull
mm-hmm.
no wool over my eyes. Because first of all,
right.
when I come into the room, I used to be a teacher. And not only that, but I'm actually a therapist. I had my daughter
right.
was in tears earlier this year because she's in gifted and she couldn't find one of her assignments. And she was saying her teacher told her that if she didn't have it, she was going to get a zero. And my daughter was in tears. When I say in tears so much, we turned around from the bus stop, came back home to look for the paper. She was
mm-hmm.
in tears. She was shaking. She was terrified. I wrote a note to her teacher in her agenda telling her as a therapist, the symptoms I'm seeing my child exhibit based on this one assignment that you telling her there's no way to give her another copy of. I said, I used to be a teacher. There has to be some way she can get another copy of this assignment
exactly.
so that she
right.
can get it done and turn it in. She came home that she didn't want me to write a letter because she write the letter in her agenda because she thought things were going to get worse. So she come
mm-hmm.
home that day. She said, Mom, you were right. She gave me a copy. That let her know, hey, listen, y'all can't be doing this to my kids. She should not be experiencing
right.
this over one assignment.
Right.
So
and,
we got
to
be involved. We
got to
be.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And if you don't
you're
have
right.
the skills, get involved with the guidance counselor at school because that's their job to advocate for your child. That's what they're there
for. Well, here's
for.
The thing, too. Here's the other thing that we're up against. The demonstration in Virginia showed that there are many
mm-hmm.
people out here with a hidden agenda to destroy and get rid of African-Americans on all levels. There were teachers out there, guidance counselors, doctors, police officers. You know, these are everyday people that are walking around, and they have this agenda. And I have come up against people that are in the schools. They're in the school system. They stay there. They're full tenure. They retire. And the whole time that they're there, they have another agenda going on. And so we have a lot of issues to deal with. And then when you have parents that are not as involved because they may be working two jobs and, you know, they're a single parent and they have to do this and that, and they have all they can do to get them out in the morning, and then when they get off work to pick them up from a center because they can't pick them up after school, you know. So they have all of these issues, and then you have people that have free rein. We had a school where when the trying to think what trial was it? There was a maybe it was the OJ trial. No, because I think it had
the OJ trial.
With,
the OJ trial.
It was fourth grade. It was Trayvon Martin.
Okay.
It was Trayvon Martin, and so the teacher, the white teacher in the class, she turned on the television, and she had all the white kids in the front, all the black kids sitting in the back of the classroom. And so as the program was going on the television, her comments were, well, he got what he deserved. He should have followed instructions. And so all the kids were like, whoa, that's not what my mom is saying. That's not what my dad is saying at home. So they realized, oh, we have two totally opposite views here. And so some of the kids came out to school, and they were saying how hurt they felt and how they didn't understand why she was saying those kinds of things. So we had to have a meeting with the parents, and I called the principal. I said, we have to have a conversation here. And so the principal came over, and she listened to all of the things that the youngsters had to say, and she had a conversation with the teacher. And the teacher felt like, huh, I don't have to put up with this. I'll go somewhere else. And so she resigned and she left and she went to another school system somewhere so that she can still tout her views on our children. So, you know, our children are dealing with a lot of things. Our parents are dealing with a lot of things. And
absolutely.
I applaud you for your career and the things that you're doing. And it's like you said, if we could just, you know, make a million of you, you know, a lot of things would change around here. But
we need
some
brothers that therapists too. No, we need some brothers.
No, we I know male therapists
too. Y'all always doing something without us. Do you find that?
So listen,
let me ask y'all something. Do y'all think since we're on down the road, do y'all think there's some stress in relationships between black men and black women in their relationships? Cassidy?
You said, do I think there's stress?
Yeah, stress, tension. A month ago that there's a war between, I've been hearing this for like 30 years. There's a war between the black man and the black woman. What do you think?
All right, I don't know if there's a war. I think times have just changed. I think the role that black women played, you know, decades ago versus the role black women play today is just different. Some brothers can get with it, some brothers can't. I mean, the most educated individual in the world is an African-American woman. We are the most educated person on the planet, statistically speaking. I'm just saying, ain't no shame.
Hold up. I know women more advanced than men. I know that. I mean, there's been many tests and experiments that prove that women are advanced than men. But on the same hand, I could argue as if you look at our history, the black man put his neck on the chopping blocks for centuries and been building civilization. Not only for his woman, but for the world.
Okay. Yeah, you didn't give me a chance to finish. Now, we are the most educated, but we're also the most divorced.
Yes, I know. I read a statistic
you know,
one time that that the average black woman go through two marriages, and her second marriage, like 65% of women, black women that married, their second marriage is something of that nature. I have it down there. I didn't know I was going to talk about the divorce rate. But it's not good of a successful marriage in our culture. What is that?
I mean, I think that there are successful black marriages. I'm not going to say that there isn't. I know that on the OWN Network, they have a show called Black Love.
But they're a minority.
Yeah, we are a minority.
I don't think you're going to hear 50-year anniversaries. I don't think you're going to hear 40-year anniversaries.
We do. I have a client. I have
a trilogy for 10 years.
Man, I got a couple right now who's been married for 57 years, an African American couple. So all I'm saying is it's out there. You just got it depends on the person.
It's 1 out of 10,000.
What'd you say?
Yes. It's 1 out of 10,000 that reached that mark. And that's if black men live long enough. That's if black men live long enough.
Yeah, the times that we're in are very challenging. And
of course
the result, you know. Yeah, so there are a lot of issues that, you know, challenge relationships, I think, and that's for all cultures. I think that,
absolutely.
You know, we're African Americans, we have additional stress because, you know, in addition to trying to do all things that you're doing, you know, we're dealing with a lot of racial issues, and we're easily identifiable by the color of our skin. I mean, people don't have to know anything about you. I mean, a lot of other ethnicities could mingle into society because of your skin color. And in cases of African Americans, you know, we cannot. That is a pressure keg in of itself, to be constantly in a position where you're being targeted. And in addition to that, you know, we have your everyday issues regarding staying together, money being one of the biggest problems. But,
absolutely.
You know, we have to, and it's twofold because it's not going to get better until we begin to train our children to respect themselves and respect each other. And we're in a time now where it's full decadence. Children are reciting lyrics to some of the most decadent things that you can think about, and they don't even know what they're saying. But it's become
a
part of their.
They don't even know how to say it.
You made a great point.
You
made a great point. But guess what?
Going on.
Mm-hmm. We have to be models. They have to model the behavior we want our kids to have. How we talk
exactly.
to our kids speaks life or death
yeah.
to them. So
yep.
we have to be able to show that in our own homes, and we have to be able to build up that self-esteem in our kids. Part of that whole
absolutely.
What happens here, stay here epidemic happens generation after generation after generation. Y'all knew Uncle Joe been molesting kids for decades, and nobody ain't said nothing about it. Nobody ain't doing nothing about it. So now he done got
yeah,
the grandma.
Mm-hmm.
He done got the mama. Now he on the granddaughter. You know what I mean? Like, so
mm-hmm.
we got to start that within ourselves, and we need to get help
exactly.
for the stuff that we went through. Because what happens
exactly.
to us as children shapes us as adults.
Mm-hmm.
It shapes us as
mm-hmm.
husbands and wives, and it shapes us as parents. All of that
yeah.
stuff,
we have to
all
have
of that
yep.
stuff, trust me, comes right back into who we are as adults.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That's exactly right. So, you know, so we have a lot to deal with and to address. And, you know, there was a time when the image, the American dream was to, you know, have two and a half kids and the cars in the garage and
white picket fence
mm-hmm.
and
the husband works and the mother stays home. Well, that is not a reality for many of the people.
Well, I always knew the black woman to work all my life. I always knew the black woman always worked. My
yeah,
mother worked. My grandma worked. All my aunts
that's
worked.
Black
women was catching the buses and the trains up in Jersey and New York every since I can remember. So
exactly.
two and a half kids and the car in the garage. Well, we had no garages where I grew up at. You know, so a lot
exactly.
of these images
yeah.
that come on that idiot box really shapes our thinking. And what you say about
that. That's one of the reasons why, for I remember when I was in elementary school, and the activists in the community were saying, turn off those televisions.
Yeah.
Turn off those
televisions. Oh, I'm glad you mentioned that. So when the hurricane came and I was at a friend's house, I didn't stay in my apartment, I was at a friend's house, and we lost power for a day. The next day when the power was out, the first day when the power was out for, you know, daytime, I told the kids, I said, go outside and play. Mama, can we get your phone? Man, can you do this? I said, listen, back in the day when we were kids, when we got home, we had to go outside. We had to go outside and play.
Yep.
Now everything is about technology. Mama, let me get your phone.
Yep.
Let me get this. Yep. Can you look up in it? You know, we live in a society that's full of instant gratification, and we wonder why addiction is running rapid. Because it's quicker for somebody to go take a drug to feel better than to face the reality of what has happened to them or what they've experienced and get help. You know, a lot of us are just being exposed to a lot of things by the shows that we watch.
Right.
You know, we're watching Queen Sugar, we're watching Power, we're watching Insecure. Those different shows are actually saying, hey, it's okay to not be okay. Go get help. And now you got more people reaching out because they're like, okay, if Issa could talk about it or if so-and-so could talk about it on this show, then maybe it's okay for me to get help. So it's not until that stuff is hitting the mainstream and they're seeing people that look like them go get help that they're actually willing to go do it. You know what I mean?
Do you think a white social worker could help a black family?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think this is what I'll say. You got some people that I know therapists who have went to therapists that look like them, and more damage has been done than good. Okay, so what I'll say is it's very important to make sure you have a therapist that's a fit, because the research shows the therapeutic relationship is the most important part. So you got to actually know this, learn to trust this person, get along with them, meaning you have to like them, regardless of their color. You got to like them. Or whatever they do isn't going to work. I've seen white therapists help. I've never been to a therapist of color, and I've been to therapy several times, individually, as a couple, and even after I wasn't married. And every therapist has either been Hispanic or has been Caucasian. Is it by choice? Not necessarily. Some of it was due to how I ended up going to see them, who my EAP assigned me to, whatever. But what I can say is I seen the last therapist I saw was a Christian counselor at my church, and I just knew she was going to throw the Bible at me for what I was coming to see her for. And my experience was so different. And I only saw her one time. I saw her one time. And what she advised me to do and what we did in that therapy session completely changed my whole situation. So I'm saying all that to say this, race and gender does matter depending on the issue and the circumstances. But don't dismiss a person just because of their color and say that they cannot help you, because
I'm gonna get a little bit more specific, and y'all gonna jump on me after I ask this question. I know y'all are, so I'm getting ready.
Listen, I help plenty of white people finish
the backlash. Do you think service industry and the mental health field benefits the black man? Can the black man benefit from those fields?
As a worker or as a client?
As a client.
Why wouldn't he be able to?
Well, they said that really social service industry is really there. If a black family is involved, they're more in support of the female than the male. Or the boyfriend, the husband, or whatever, common law, man, whatever, like that, and it's not really set up to really assist the black man, and that's how, and we as black men see through that, and that's why we really resisted when the workers come to our homes.
Okay, let me ask you this. Are they coming to your homes because, like, DCF, or I think y'all call it DICE up there, because they've been involved with an investigation, or is it just you reaching out to services? Because I think that totally changes the dynamic.
Only thing I'm saying is, do you think that the social service industry and the mental health field, producer for the black man?
Well, I don't think that it was designed to be conducive for the black man.
Okay.
And at the same time, there is a possibility and a potential for a black man to get help. But just like...
I know you need help, but are they... Because you got to look at every segment.
No, when I'm talking about getting help, I'm not just talking about going and filling out papers and get what you need. I'm talking about to really be there and understand the nuances of his existence, the strifes, the struggles, the things that he's going through, and to be able to not just placate and say, oh, yeah, well, you can get over that, blah, 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 because there are so many issues that, you know, African-American men have struggled with, and things that have not been expressed and addressed for over 400 years here in this country. And so you're constantly being told to put that behind you, forget about that, don't worry about that, come over here, let us say whatever we want, let us message you, let whatever is going to just follow along, just have a good time. And you know at the end of the day, you're struggling, your family's struggling, you're seeing all of these things that's going on. I have a very close friend that's a veteran and is down here and kind of like, because he's a veteran and retired, he's into a lot of social situations and, you know, he'll call me and one of the first things, you know, he'll talk about is, man, I'm so tired of these phony people. Yeah, I'm so tired of these people trying to, you know, sit down here and get a check and analyze me. They don't get me. You know, so someone like that, you know, yeah, it's a problem. It's a problem.
Yeah, I think there's other dynamics to that as well. I don't know if you guys are familiar with the care at the VA. Don't get me wrong. They mean well, but it's more like an assembly line. They have such high caseloads that they're not really able to sometimes provide the care that's needed. I have people who have VA benefits who rather come pay me out of pocket than to go to the VA to receive therapy services.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think, and that's not necessarily the therapist's fault at the VA. I just know when I had looked into getting a job there, you know, that was one of the things that I thought about. Like, I'd rather be able to provide more quality and intensive services,
right?
You know,
exactly.
To a smaller caseload, and yeah, they pay very well starting out, but and that's not everybody, and that's not every VA system. But I know in Florida, ours is pretty jacked up. It's pretty bad here.
So is New York. Oh, New York is okay. Well, only got a minute and so seconds left. Chastity, do you have anything coming up that you would like the audience to know? Going over the air this week. Do you have anything coming up?
I don't really want to promote myself, but what I wanted to do is just make sure everybody knows that you can find black therapists in your area. Black Therapist Rock is a really good resource, blacktherapistrock.com, and that's therapist with an S. And you have Black Girl Collective. There's actually a therapyforblackgirls.com is a directory that you can find black therapists in your area as well. Open Path is a foundation where you can get therapy from $30 to $50. I'm actually signed up on there. That's my way of giving back. So if you find a therapist in Open Path, you can actually pay as little as $30, $30 to $50
okay.
for a private practice therapist.
All right, Ms. Chandler, I thank you for coming on. I really have more questions. I have to bring you back in a couple of months, you know, if you can, you know, so we could continue.
Absolutely.
I didn't really hear on the family. I didn't hear on a lot of stuff. So I got to have you come back. So I enjoyed you. Hey, Jay, thank you for coming on.
Continue to do that great work you're doing. It's awesome. Thank you.
So, another week, bye. Because we are because I am. Let's just thank Chassie Chandler and
stay home, brother.
Coming on.
will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because